Well, good morning, Jimmy. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. It's just marvelous when you get a chance to work with great leaders who, great thought leaders is what I should say, who can really make a difference. Good morning and thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much, Glenn. Great to be here.
Fantastic. You know, we're going to spend a lot of time diving into what leadership skills you bring to the table, what solutions you bring to the table. But I always like to start out with just kind of a let's get to know you type of question. So my question is this for you. What is it about you? What is it about you or your company that we don't know that we should know? So we can't really see it on your website or on your brochures or any of your classes. What is it that we don't know that we should know?
That is a really interesting question. And I would like to say probably everything you should know is on the website, but I think the one thing where potentially we differ from most of the leadership development, high performance team development organizations that we run up against in the marketplace is a real focus on the human being versus leadership. And what do I mean by that? It's, leadership is a human team sport. And when you are working with leaders to focus on, the technical business skills or their capabilities, oftentimes it can be a little bit dehumanized. And so everything that we do in our business is completely focused on helping people to connect more effectively with each other. And we have a variety of ways of doing that. I think the other thing that people probably don't know that they should know is we draw a lot of parallels and similarities between the world of the ocean and leadership. So you can imagine there's the concept of going deep, high pressure, breathing, and lots of other sort of analogies and metaphors that we can build around the sense of the ocean that allow us to paint pictures in people's heads or turn light bulbs on in people's heads that potentially that's not, it's not on the website in such a explicit way, but we certainly try and bring that through all of the work that we do with leadership.
Well, that's great because what you just did, you tipped me off to my second question, which means I'm going to skip my first question. Because you mentioned, this connection between the mission and the vision and everybody, but you also talked about there's three levels of connections or three steps of connection. Can you talk about those? Just quickly define those real quick for us.
Sure, absolutely. Well, what we believe in our practice are the three pillars of high performance are creating trust, creating a sense of connection, and creating clarity of purpose. And if you can line those three pillars up in a team between the leader and the team, between the team and the leader, and between the team and the team, then what you tend to see is things improve dramatically in terms of performance, engagement, innovation, well-being. You measure a whole lot of different variables, but if you can get those three things right, it works really well. If we dive specifically into the concept of connection, what we tend to see is that we are basically tribal animals, and if you go back through sort of prehistory, if you were a loner, your chances of survival were significantly lower than they were if you were part of a tribe. And that tribe could be a pack of animals, it could be a flock, a shoal of fish, or it could be a bunch of prehistoric humans. But if there was another set of eyes looking out for predators, if there were an extra set of eyes looking out for food, your chances of survival went up. So we became hardwired to want to connect. And, when we look at it from a leadership and team performance perspective, there's three moments or three types of connection that we really want to see occur well. Number one is connecting people into the tribe. So that could be your recruitment and onboarding process. And so when we look at the connection of people into your business, we have a framework that we use made up of four C's and four S's, the four C's being heart connection. The four S's being head connection, but essentially what they are, they're the building blocks of how do you connect somebody into your team so they become part of your tribe. They understand what they've got to do. They feel cared about. They feel like they know the culture. They feel like they understand what the expectations are on them, and so on and so on. The second type of connection is connecting people with the plan. So we have to know what we're doing. We have to know where we're going, and we have to know how we're going to do that. And more importantly, we need to know why. So the second type of connection we think is extremely important for a team high performance is connecting to the plan. And then the third piece, and I think this is the one that often gets overlooked the most, is connecting people with growth and development. And so there's a really important piece of, yes, I might have joined the team with this set of skills, but over time, I also need to learn and grow new skills and be able to solve new problems and be able to work in new ways because the market around me is shifting, because the dynamic is shifting, because things are always moving. And so having a leader and team who are constantly curious, exploring, and upskilling is absolutely critical to that high performance. So you've got those three types of connection: connecting to the tribe, connecting to the plan, and connecting to development.
Okay, well, that makes me think then about this idea of growth and development. There's some companies who say, well, you know, what skills you bring to the table, if you want to go further in the company, get your own skills. You're not really an advocate of that. You're more of an advocate, I think, of saying, okay, we're going to prepare our people. We're going to let that grow.
I think it's a combination of both. You know, there's always a yes and yes in the world of leadership. I don't think it's a black and white sport. You know, we as leaders absolutely have an obligation to connect our team with development.
Okay.
And what do I mean by that? There's the opportunity to go on training courses and development. There's an opportunity to have coaching, mentoring conversations with those around me or indeed with my leader. Okay. And there's an opportunity to try some new things. You know, so if you're using the 70-20-10 model, we've gone 10-20-70 the way through it. But realistically, those opportunities to try new things are where the rubber hits the road. It's the opportunity to try, practice, stumble, graze our knees, get up, dust ourselves off and have another go.
Okay.
But equally, there's a sense that employees should be obliged or encouraged to invest in their own development. So nobody is more interested in your career than you. So essentially what we want to say is, as a leader, hey, I want you to go and learn new skills. I want you to go and come up with new stuff. What are you going to focus on for the next 6 to 12 months? What's the key areas that you want to invest in? Great. How do I help you do that? Equally, how do I enable you with some funding or some budgeting or some flexibility to be able to go off and do that training course, to go and attend that conference or to have that mentoring relationship? So it's a combination of both. Leaders should be encouraging and employees should be self-encouraging to go off and do it.
Okay. Now, I have another question in that area, but I'd like for you to go back and explain to us real quickly the 70-20-10 that you mentioned just a minute ago. Tell us
absolutely
give us a detail about that. Fill that in for us.
So 70-20-10 is a really nice way of thinking about the balance and breakdown of how people can plan and execute their own development with their leader. So if we imagine a pizza, and you cut it into three pieces. The first piece is about 10% of the pizza, so it's a little wedge. The next piece is 20%, and then the rest of it is 70%. And that's kind of the distribution of how your development should be thought of. So that little slice at the top is what we would call formal education or formal development. So that could be going on a training course. It could be attending conferences. It could be working on a specific academic program. But it's that formal learning and training. And unfortunately, that's where, for a lot of people, that's where their learning and development ends. They go on a course once a year. They attend a conference once a year, and that's about it. But, you know, that's 10% of the puzzle. The next piece, the next slightly bigger wedge in our pizza is the 20% part. And what most people think of here is a coaching or a mentoring relationship with somebody else. What I like to think of it is, is getting new opinions and perspectives. So it's like I've done my course and I think about something in a certain way. But then if I come back and I talk to some other people about that and I throw some ideas around and I share some of my thinking and I get some other inputs. So I've got these ideas that are challenging my own ideas and perspectives, my own conclusions, asking me to reflect on the things that I learned. That's the 20%. And you'll notice that 20% is two times as much as the 10%. So if I go on a one-day course, then maybe I want to have 2 days at least of that reflection built in over my development plan.
I'm sorry, I was just going to interrupt. I think a lot of leaders miss that. Okay, if I send you to a full day course and to give you 2 days to review it and practice it and reflect upon it, I think that's a good point. I just wanted to emphasize that because I know I missed that.
100%, and most people do. And you know, the reality is most training courses actually achieve extremely little, because the person goes off on the course, they drink from a fire hose of content and information, they try and scribble some notes down, they look at their phones halfway through the day and they're like, oh my God, I've got 200 emails to get back to, and I've got a full day of meetings tomorrow. So they then come back to work the following day, and the manager's like, cool, good to see you back. Loads of stuff to be done. And that content gets lost, and the implementation of that content gets lost. So having that moment of maybe come back to the team and present what you heard, or talk about your three biggest lessons from the day, or what are you going to change as a result of what you went through and what you learned, and how can we keep you accountable for that? It's those types of coaching conversations that make a huge difference to the learning and development of an individual. The final piece of our pizza is our 70% piece, and this is what I call where the rubber hits the road. So this is, you've been on a training course, you've talked about what your reflections were, you've talked about what you got out of it, but now you've got to go and try some new stuff. So imagine your comfort zone being a little bubble. You need to step outside your comfort zone for a little bit of a moment, try something new, try solving a harder problem, try dealing with a more complex scenario, try a new skill that you haven't done before, solve something. But it's that stepping outside of your comfort zone a little bit, so you feel a little bit uneasy, and then regressing back and having a coaching conversation. What did you learn from that? How did it go? What have you taken away from it? How could you use what you learned next time around? And then you step outside the comfort zone again, and then you step back in. And again, this is one of the great overlooked areas of development that leaders don't necessarily give their team, who are desperate to show them what they could do and how, you know, they're ready for promotion, or they're ready for the full pay rise, or they're ready for the bonus. They just give me an opportunity to show you how good I am. This is the 70% moment. So it's like, okay, cool. We're going to give you the lead on this piece. You're going to take us through it. We're here to support you, but I want you to try some new things. And that 70%. So again, if we did one day on course, we've got 2 days of coaching and reflection. We've got 7 days of trying new things and learning and reflecting on those, and trying to improve our performance.
Well, that's really makes it kind of tough, I think. And I think you addressed this a little bit. When you're looking at that 70, 20, 10 split, you're talking about more than just the 1 day training. And a lot of us, the bean counters, if you forgive me, and companies say, well, that 1 day training costs us $5,000 with our return. But now you're actually saying, okay, well, that didn't return till you get 10 days or 10, 100% in. What's the
I really
trade-off?
like the way you're saying
Trade-off. Yeah.
that. Yeah, completely. You know, if the to me, yes, you might have spent $5,000 on that training course for that person, but unless they start doing the thing they were trained in, you haven't actually realized the return on investment at all. So you've got to give them some opportunities to try and show what they've learned in order to bring out the performance.
What strategies do you have for that? So let's
In
say
terms
you're
of
teaching a
how leaders can do it.
let's say we're just teaching a class on, well, let me really make it tough for me anyway. So when we're talking about the mission and the vision and the purpose of our organizations and our team, to me, I kind of think that should be a day-long class. So you get the mission down and you get the purpose down, then 2 days of review, and then 7 days of applying it. Am I getting it kind of right? I mean, a lot of companies won't train on mission and vision. They say, here, read it and be set.
Yeah, so I mean, let's take that example and expand it out and explain it. So we might run a 1 day workshop on, let's create the team purpose, and let's align our individual role purposes and make sure that's lined up to our personal purposes. So we all are fully invested in what we do in our job and how our job supports the team. So we create that alignment activity, and that might be a day-long workshop. Then what I would do is, as a leader, I'd be sitting down with each member of my team and saying, so what were your reflections on that workshop? And how did you personally connect? And what is it that you're going to be doing differently now based on that connection in the way you do your job? And how are you going to interact with some of the other people in the team? Fantastic. How are we going to measure that? And then maybe over the next few days, Or it might be, you know, an ongoing, let's revisit this every month, because it isn't just one day, 2 days, 7 days. It's a multiple.
Yeah.
So let's just say over the next couple of months, you know, we're going to spend 7 days worth of time, could be, you know, a couple of hours every week, going, so how are you changing your behaviors to live more on purpose? Who have you noticed in the team who is really doing a great job, and how could you emulate them? What are your thoughts about leading a team session where we look at all the priorities the team is working on and make sure that they're aligned to our purpose? What are the things you're going to stop doing that we can hold you accountable to that are actually deviating from the purpose that you set for yourself? So you're getting people to try new things, right? You're getting them to run a team session. You're getting them to observe other people who are doing a great job and emulate them. You're getting them to start thinking critically about their activities. And this is development, right? So they're actually thinking and talking and discussing and reviewing their behaviors based on that one session around purpose. They're starting to really channel their development in a different direction. Equally, it could be along the lines of, I want you to be, well, you, one of your purpose pieces that you may have identified as a team is that we cross-skill each other. So, you know, one of the team, we're a very collaborative, very collective focused team. So it might be we say, well, part of the 70% activity is we're going to job shadow each other. So one of our days a week, you know, maybe a Thursday afternoon, for example, we hop across and we sit with somebody else on their desk and we learn how they do their job. And then the following Thursday, they learn how we do our job. And then if somebody's away on vacation, we've got that cross-functional ability. That's a 70% application activity.
Okay, that's wonderful. I like that, because that's one of the roles of a leader, is to break down the walls. And so why not have jumping back and forth? That's really wonderful. You know, you use a phrase, and I'd like for you to give a definition for it. Then I have a question behind it.
Sure.
Excuse me. Disrupted industries. What is that?
Disrupted industries. So, you know, the you may have come across a word called VUCA. VUCA is volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And it's essentially kind of the four descriptive words for the modern world that we live in. You know, it's very volatile, it's very uncertain, very complex, and very ambiguous. And what we see in certain industries is those levels of VUCA are significantly amplified. Why? Because the business model or the organizational framework that they have or the structure that they operate in is potentially either outdated or not fit for current purpose. So let's look at a couple of examples. The banking industry would have been a perfect example of an industry that's going through a disruption in the last few years. So not only were banks traditionally a brick and mortar institution, you had a bank on the high street, and that was where all the transactions were done. And then gradually computers came into effect. So those banks became networked. And then all of a sudden it was online banking and telephone banking. And now it's a bank in your pocket. And then the next evolution is the non-traditional financial institutions. So things like Revolut and Wise, who offer almost the same services as a bank without any of the brick and mortar facilities that the traditional banking platforms and organizations have. And so all of a sudden, you've got these basically replica banks without any of the cost base that the banking organizations have. And so the banks have then got to go, well, we've got all of these places that we own or rent, all of these premises, we've got to think differently because our business model is not sustainable compared to these smaller agile organizations. We need to start thinking differently about how we lead and run our organization. So that is an industry that's facing significant disruption right now. Another one would be something like the construction industry, which is previously been, you know, we've essentially built stuff in pretty much the same way. Houses have been built in pretty much the same way for over 100 years. And all of a sudden, we've got people can design their house on their own computer. There's 3D printing. There's new architectural models. There's new materials available. There's new technologies available. And people are trying to, you know, prefabricate houses in factories and drop them in. There's an amazing company called Boxable, where you can buy literally a sort of flat packed house that they deliver on the back of a truck, and then they unfold it on the concrete pad and it's ready in 3 hours. Well, most people take a year to build a house, right? So if you can suddenly build a house in 3 hours, That's disrupting the industry. So again, these traditional construction organizations that have relied on a steady stream of business have now gone, oh, we need to think differently. And in order to think differently, we need to act differently, and we need different leaders to help us. And that's the type of organizations that we get stuck into.
Okay. Well, it seems like to me, when you talk about VUCA and disrupted industries, we're talking about every industry these days. I mean, software development, everything is that way. So I think this is an important lesson. How do we get that chain, that trust, the connection, and the purpose? How do we train that into that type of industry? I know you said a 70-20-10 split, but when you're when you take your product inside to train with somebody, I think they used to call it the Kirkpatrick model of training, where you want to make sure 6 months from now they're better than what they were this month instead of just that 1 or 2 days. How do I, as a leader, that's a better way I want to put it, how do I, as a leader, make sure that mission, that purpose that I'm bringing forth is trained throughout my disrupted industry?
Yeah, good question. You know, I would always recommend starting with trust. You know, when we work inside organizations, we always start with trust building activities. And we have a 7-point framework that we use to help leaders build trust, because trust for most people is quite a nebulous concept. You know you do trust somebody, or you know you don't trust somebody, but you don't really know why, and you don't really know what to do to build trust with people. So what we've created is a framework that allows people to essentially categorize and quantify their levels of trust in their team. So there's 4 different layers of trust, from the most superficial level of trust, which is you work here and I work here, therefore we've got to trust each other this much. Down the next layer would be we work on the same things, we're aligned, so we have to make sure we talk to each other and share some stuff, and I have to trust you that much. And they're very cerebral levels of trust, right? It's like intellectually, I can trust you. What's much deeper is when we move down to layers 3 and 4, which are what I would call the intuitive or emotional levels of trust. So we move into the third layer, which is where we start talking about sort of problem solving together. We co-create, we share potentially mistakes or issues. And then down to the deepest levels of trust, which is where I start to actually talk about things like my fears, my worries, my concerns. And what we see in most organizations is there are very few people who have that base level of deep, deep trust. It normally is reserved for your significant other, your family, and maybe your closest friends. So our job in an organization is to move people from the, yeah, we both work here, down to the, hey, I can stick my hand up and say I've had a bit of a problem with this and I need your help, and for you to be willing to help me back. And in order to achieve those depth of trust, and obviously the deeper you go, the darker it can become, or the more risky it can become in that relationship. So we want to give you a framework to do that. So we have a framework called Service, S-E-R-V-I-C-E, and that's essentially 7 different levers that you can pull to build trust as a leader, or to build trust with your team. So we talk about the concept of building a sense of safety in the team, both psychological and physical safety. We talk about setting clear expectations. We talk about making sure that you are reliable for your team. So you do what you say you're going to do. You achieve what you say you're going to achieve, and you're consistent. We talk about being vulnerable. And there's a beautiful piece of research around the concept of vulnerability. We talk about being inclusive, making sure that your team and you are both very clear. And the final E is empathy. So you've got safety, expectations, reliability, vulnerability, inclusion, clarity, and empathy. And if you can use the methodology that we have to achieve each of those, what we see is gradually the layers of trust deepen. And that high trust environment allows the performance of the team to significantly improve. Once you've got trust starting to form, and trust is like a snowball, it builds up and builds up. But if you destroy it, it's gone. So you've got to keep putting effort into it. Then you start working on the connection. And once you've got connection, you can start working on purpose. But it's, you know, I wouldn't say it's like 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. It's like you start that ball rolling. And then as soon as that ball is rolling, you start the next ball rolling and start the next ball rolling. So you try and have 3 legs of a stool being created at the same time in the team. So that's what we do as a framework with the organizations we work with.
good distinction. You know, something that you said, though, sounds like we're talking about really just flat out communication skills.
It's,
Communicating
I
with your
mean,
team.
yeah, essentially, yes. You know, the what we find in organizations is generally the barrier to performance is the leader doesn't know how to, hasn't been taught how to, doesn't have the confidence to, or doesn't have the time to have the conversations that really make a difference with their team. So intuitively, you know, if I was to go into a room of leaders, sit around a board table and go, what does good leadership look like in this organization? 99% of organizations can tell you exactly what good leadership looks like. Of those 99% of organizations, we know only about 25% actually do it. So, which is why we've got 75% of our population in the Americas who are actively disengaged. So 75% of employees don't like their job and are actively switched off. So we know that whilst we might know what good leadership looks like, we don't necessarily do good leadership.
Not
So the
practice.
job of myself and my team is to go into the organizations and either validate the good thinking of the leadership team and say, cool, you're exactly along the right lines. How are we going to help you do that? Or if they're in that minority of groups who just have no idea, like we don't know how to have those conversations, we don't know what to do, we say, well, cool, well, we can come in and lead those conversations with you and show you how to do it and set you up for success. So when it's your turn to take the reins again, you're more prepared, you're in a better position. So really is the sitting down and go, okay, team, how are we going to deal with this situation? Who's got some ideas? What might we try? Who's seen this before? You know, it's very simple conversation questions, but they're very, very powerful. And we must be careful here as well to make the great distinction between simple and easy, because leadership it's just not easy.
It could be very simple, but it's just not easy. It's just
Correct.
not easy. And now I want to ask you about your program, the ways of working. Tell us how that fits into what we've been talking about. Why did you create that, and how does that fit in?
Yeah, you know, it's the ways of working is probably, you know, the culmination of my life's work in many ways. I've gone through a career of complex leadership roles, both from my first job as a British Army officer, at the ripe old age of 22, turning up in Iraq in the middle of Gulf War II and learning to lead in a war zone. So the ultimate sort of high stakes environment, then through a corporate career where I ended up running an eight-figure business as a GM, and then subsequently into a consulting role in various large organizations. And through all of those times, I noticed a few things. Number one, leadership is simple but not easy, and people need support to do a better job in the way they lead, and often are just looking for a little bit of help, a little bit of guidance, a sounding board. I also saw that most leadership programs don't work because of the same reasons we spoke about earlier. You know, you send somebody off on a leadership course for 3 days, they get vomited lots and lots of leadership information, and then they come back and they've got busy diaries, busy schedules, busy lives, and they never actually implement the things they learned because they weren't shown how to implement them, and the generic information that was shared with them didn't really apply to their context, so they couldn't work out how to sort of fit that square peg into a round hole. And then the third piece was the necessity for the, well, I guess the shift in dynamic of the working arrangement from what I would call the 1990s autocratic leader, you know, the hero leader who would say, follow me, we're going this way, to what I would call now a much more consultative democratic model of leadership, which is where the leader should be immersed inside the team and say, who's got ideas? And the leader moving from being the person with all the ideas and all the answers to almost the facilitator of the conversation to reach a conclusion and then make a decision on that conclusion.
Well,
So
that makes sense,
what,
yeah.
yeah. So what we saw was that there was this real need in the market for leaders to have the opportunity not to go off on a course and then come back, but actually to do the course with their team. So there was a less of a disruption in the team. Also, to create that bonding experience of connection with their teams, where they were actually able to discuss in a grown-up way and overcome that fear of not having all the answers and not having all the solutions, but actually being comfortable to say, okay, team, who's got some ideas? Which is the way the military teaches their officers still. It's like you have subject matter experts in your senior soldiers, and the officer's first question will be ideas. And you know, oh, we should do this, or we could try this, and we could do this. Okay, I'm going to listen to all those. I'm going to assimilate all those. And my decision is we're going to go and do this. It's not just the leader in the military doesn't just say, here's my plan. They've considered all the options, and then they've made a plan to give clarity to everybody. So we basically took that same concept and turned it into a training program for teams and leaders. So what we do is we partner with organizations generally at the senior level, tiers 1 to 4, so CEO down to business unit leader. And we take them through a, depending on the cadence of that specific team, but sort of 3 to 4 month program with 3 different modules, which is based on building trust, connection, and purpose. But we do it in a way where it's tailored for the specific context of the team. So let me give you an example. We have a very comprehensive diagnostic that we send to all the members of the team, including the leader, and we basically get a snapshot of the dynamic in that team right now. So a very basic level, how much trust is there? How much connection is there? How clear are you on purpose? But it goes a lot deeper than that. We take that diagnostic and we build 3 modules around the team. So the first module is what we call alignment. So let's get everybody in the team facing in the same direction, agreeing that this is the thing we're going to do and going in the same place. The second module is called accelerate, which is where we look at what are the things that really need to start amping up for this team to boost performance, and what does performance look like for this team? And then the third module is called sustain, which is, yeah, you've had some fun times with Jimmy and his team for a couple of months, but once that finishes, you need to be able to do this on your own as a team that has now high trust, high connection, and high purpose. So how are we going to do that? How do we transition the steering back to you so you're in charge of it? Because as I mentioned at the start, the idea here is not that the leader has to do it all themselves, but they have to be able to lead the conversation. They have to be able to lead the team. So whether we're validating their good practice or whether we're teaching them how to do it, either way, they end up at the end of the program able to lead those conversations ongoing in a different way to maybe they were approaching it at the start.
Wow. Okay. Love that, because what we're saying is that we're going to take this apart and look at the 3 different alignments there and get all 3 of them built, even though we're doing them all at kind of the same time as the snowball, as you said, starts going down the hill. I think that's a powerful way to teach this thing. What else are you doing right now to help leaders be better leaders, help leaders connect with their teams, get their mission and statements out there? What are you doing right now to help people do that? Are you doing any like keynote addresses or anything like that?
Yes, indeed. So at the moment, actually, appear in quite a few podcasts. I don't know if I mentioned, we're actually in the process of launching a book based on all of the concepts that we've built up over the last few years, specifically in relation to building a high performance culture versus burning out. So we actually have a book called Beat Burnout, Ignite Performance. See if I can get it on the camera. Beat Burnout, Ignite Performance, which is essentially it's a playbook for how leaders can build a high performance culture and avoid burnout with their team. And we have 5 different variables we discovered over about a 5-year window. So I'm very excited that that is going to be coming out in May 2023. And I'm sure there'll be a link somewhere that we could share, Glenn, that is we're offering the first chapter for free to people. The other piece
will be
that
in the description,
Amazing.
I'm sorry, I just want to let everybody know the link is in the description for you, so be there.
The other thing that I'm actually really excited about is not only alongside the book, but is the opportunity to take ways of working, concepts and thinking, and what we call our community more globally. So this week, in April, we'll actually be launching the Ways of Working podcast, which is where I'm going to partner with experts from a whole variety of different fields who bring a set of insights for giving leaders a performance edge. So we've partnered with large organizations that have experts in the fields of talent management, recruitment. We partnered with one of Richard Branson's organizations to talk about neurodiversity in the workplace. We've talked about AI and disruption of AI and technology. So there's some fantastic episodes in the Ways of Working podcast, which absolutely are, you know, if you're on your way to work and you're thinking, oh my goodness, how am I going to get, how am I going to make a difference this year? How am I going to boost my numbers? How am I going to hit those targets? How do I get a performance edge that's going to get me and my team more success? And I've run out of ideas, then we definitely recommend tuning into the Ways of Working podcast for some fresh thinking and ideas. And it's very conversational. It's very organic. And I'll Good. Also bring some of my opinions based on the work we do.
Okay, so we want to make sure we link that as well so people can go to the podcast when they want to or go get the first chapter of the book. And then you said you are doing, are you doing keynotes? Or someone says, hey, can you come out and talk to us for 45 minutes to an hour? Do you do that type
Absolutely.
Of work?
Absolutely. So we do two things. We do what we call Ways of Working Labs, which is like a little 2-hour facilitated conversation. So if you want to actually get your team and do something, we have about 38 different labs that we offer to teams. Could be, you know, how do we improve decision making? How do we do problem solving? How do we deal with imposter syndrome? So there's specific sessions that we run, or we can do a 45 minute to 60 minute keynote on a specific topic where my job is to essentially turn some light bulbs on in the heads of leaders at conferences or symposiums or associations, where we just plant some seeds and we watch them germinate and we help people to connect the dots through the conversations that we have.
Sounds perfect. Sounds wonderful. Wonderful. I want to be respectful of everybody's time, so I do want to make sure, though, I ask you this final question. What is it, or what question should I have asked you that I did not ask you? What question should I have asked you that I did not ask you?
That is a challenging question.
Yes, we're always in the program. I do that because I want you to be able to say, okay, well, you missed this point, and this is a key point.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, the question that often goes unasked in podcasts about leadership is, if you are struggling with how to lead your team more effectively and you're really kind of wrangling, what help is out there? What can you do? And I think that my answer to that question is, it doesn't have to be grand gestures. You know, I think there's a lot of people who believe that, you know, leadership is a series of grand gestures, and it absolutely isn't. Leadership, great leadership, is a plethora of small gestures.
Okay.
So if you were to go to work today and just think, how do I want to show up this morning? How do I want to show up in this meeting? How do I want to show up in this one-on-one? And you just did that. It's a 60-second reflection before you change into that next phase of your day.
Yeah.
That would be better. You'd be a better leader, right? It's a small thing. We have frameworks and tools for pretty much every situation. But I think, you know, the question that isn't often asked is, what do I do to start? And it's just, well, what would be the most basic human to human connection that you could start to build, thinking about a person versus their job or their position? But just go, actually, if I just want to connect with you as a human being, what could I do slightly differently? So that would probably be the question that, you know, is often overlooked. Is, you know, it doesn't have to be complex. It's just start with something really small.
Wow. Excellent. Excellent. So that's a great question, great answer, because we oftentimes get overwhelmed. You know, we got to have these grand gestures, but like I said, a plethora of information, a plethora of questions. I like that a lot. I think we start looking at, okay, how do I show up? What can I show up? What do I want to accomplish out of this? Small decisions. Thank you. That's a great question I should have asked, and I'm glad you asked it for us and answered it for us. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome.
I want to thank you for your time. I know that these conversations need to be much deeper and much longer. Just, we also know we got other things to do, and I know you got other things to do, other people to talk to. Once again, though, all your contact information will be in the descriptions. People can follow you on LinkedIn. They can follow you wherever, every place they want to go to. So I appreciate that. Want to wish you a very great rest of the week, very great morning, evening, whatever time it is, and thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thanks so much, Glenn. Great to be here.